Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, everybody. My name is Alon. I am your host for the evening, co-hosted
by
co-hosted, yes, by Ara.
That's right.
Ara the S-Man.
I've been absent for 2 weeks.
That's right, although last week I was absent as well.
Oh, wow, you didn't even tell me and you played hooky?
Yeah, tell me about it. You know, the week before that, while I was here and Tracy was filling in for you, I was so discombobulated by your absence that I gave out my home phone number over the air.
Oh, did anyone call?
Nobody called my home, but I mean, nobody ever calls my home.
Are you sure that was an accident?
But I've never heard that phone ring, like, in the past month, so doesn't matter.
Well, you know, I can understand maybe subconsciously, you know, you wanted to get some phone calls.
I just thought you'd find it interesting. You were such a key component to this program.
Wow. Well,
that I got all messed up.
I'm touched, really.
So anyway, behind the glass here, we got Andrew running the board, making sure the show works properly. We appreciate it. And this show about games, as it is starting. And we've got four whole segments to talk about games. Now, Ara has something he wants to talk about during the second segment, about AI, if I'm correct.
That's right. It's some of you may know the term rubber band AI.
No one does. I mentioned it on the forums. They're all like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty jargonish, but you'll find out in the second segment what that's all about.
I meant in the live chat, not in the forums. If you go right now to chatterboxgameshow.com, you can link into our live chat.
And actually, like, I'm kind of shocked that all those hardcore guys in there don't know what that term means.
Dude, they're hardcore gamers. They're not hardcore designers like you. So.
Well, hey, even hardcore designers like myself don't like jargon, like.
Yeah,
but I don't want to get it.
But you were still schooled in it, so you know that stuff. Now, I want to talk about a few other things. A lot of stuff's happened. It's been a couple weeks, right? Last week, I found myself utterly addicted to Texas Hold'em on the Xbox 360. I was over at my friend John's place playing Xbox 360.
Is that like a new version of it?
Well, it's the only one they have.
Yeah, is that the one with like those? They look like you're playing with like zombies.
No, they don't. They don't have player models. They have empty chairs at the table.
Thank God.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit silly. Yeah. But I played with, you know, lots of games, and he's got the Xbox Live camera. And so I put my face on my little my Xbox Live, you know, picture. Put my own face there. I haven't come across a single other person who used a camera'd image. They all just have the stock images that they, you know, buy or get for free or whatever.
So what happens, like, there's just like a picture floating in a chair or something?
No, that's, you know, there's a rectangle thing, and in the side is your face, and to the right it shows how much money you're betting or how much money you folded, or, you know, in when you're looking at your own, it's got your cards in it, you know, basic information. But it's got your picture there. For me anyway, it's got my picture. For other people, it's got, you know, Adidas logos and Master Chief and smiley faces and stuff.
Right.
So I would have expected a little bit more, but I guess the camera is still really hard to find.
So you played this online?
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you win any money?
If I'm playing Texas Hold'em by myself.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, like, there's been a couple poker games that have come out that are not online.
Well, it has AI. I don't know if it's rubber band AI, but it does have AI. I could play single player, but that would be extremely lame. So I played it a lot. Now, today, I hang out at his house before I come to the show because it's right close to the station, and I was playing it again quite a bit. I actually managed to get a friend of mine into the game, too, so I was excited about that. But I just wanted to mention how much I'm into it. So if any listeners out there play Texas Hold'em and they want to friend me up, we can Mondays before the show starts, we can play Texas Hold'em. So
would you say that, you know, the game online is
a keeper,
realistic depiction of, you know, just playing poker with a bunch of guys?
Well, yeah, because like when I play online, the silly chat features in on other online poker, and I really don't play online poker very much. In fact, never really, but I have, and it's sort of lame. It's like, all right, I'm really, really, really bored. Right, I got nothing else to do. I'm at my parents' house with no video games or something, like that sort of scenario.
Right.
You break out the Texas Hold'em because it'll run on any machine sitting around the house.
Can you win, like, Xbox credits or
or
whatever points?
No.
No, nothing.
It's way too easy to cheat. So, anyway, so I play online. I have played anyway online, and it's lame, right? It's just like you're playing against the computer. But with Xbox Live, you've got the voice chat, and it's just simpler. You're at the couch with the controller. it's better than sitting at the computer where you got a, you know, all good posture and with the keyboard and all that. I just enjoy it more.
Is there a lot of trash talking?
You know, I came across that once, and it was a little bit, it was entertaining while being discouraging all at the same time. But most of the time, I don't run into that. You actually run into people who, today I played some games that people were actually playing realistically, not just going all in the first hand, so it was exciting. Anyway, let's get away from that. I've been playing a lot of other games, too. I tried to play that totem ball thing as soon as we got the camera, but the way that his apartment is set up, really not conducive to playing interactive camera games. We have to move stuff around to face a white wall, and we'll do that eventually. But right now, I haven't really had the chance to do it. I've heard only bad things, so I'm not expecting much. But
Totem Ball.
Totem Ball. It's the game that you can get for free, and it works with the camera to give you an idea of the camera interactivity. But it's kind of weak. Very little. Like, even if you were using a controller, like, the game is just boring.
So this camera thing, I mean, is this basically just like an iToy knockoff or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't have a microphone in it, though. But it can take 1.3 megapixel pictures, which look blurrier than a quarter VGA camera. Anyway, so I've been playing a lot of PSP stuff lately. I talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you showed me this new game like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, had you played DJ Max Portable? I heard really good things about it. We have a listener in England, and she had it before all of her games were stolen in the DDR UK scandal. And so she was telling me how DJ Max Portable was awesome. So, like, all right, I got to give this game a try. And finally got a hold of it, and it's really fun. It's essentially Beatmania for the PSP.
Yeah, right? So you know, when I played it, right, for the 5 minutes before the show.
You completely kicked ass in that game. Well, like, I did pretty well when I got my hands on it, but you did better than I did. Extremely.
But you have to understand that, like, I've wasted years of my life at rhythm games. So,
me,
like,
too, dude.
No, but, like, really years.
Keyboard mania. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, like, yeah, my first impression was like, wow, this is awesome. And then my second impression is like, no, I can't play this. This is garbage.
Why is it garbage?
So here's the thing. I mean, like, you know, the whole presentation is really slick. Like, let me tell you the good parts about it, right, first.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's really polished and it's really slick and, you know, all that other stuff. And, you know, actually one of the things it does really well that Beatmania doesn't do so well
is that, have good music?
Is that, I mean, well, the songs, more specifically, right? I mean, the songs are a lot more melodic, which means that it's a lot easier to get into than, like, you know, a lot of the beat meters, like, like, whatever. It's like, it's very mechanical, right?
And crappy.
And so it's hard to get into the groove with a song that's very mechanical.
I believe.
And at the same time, in this game, they seem to do a much better job of very carefully distinguishing the notes that you play from, you know, the background tracks. And that's something that, you know, Beatmania has not done well in some songs.
For the record, that's
songs.
Not true in every song, but for the most part, I completely agree.
I mean, some songs are good and some are bad, but, like, there are a lot of songs in Beatmania that, like, I mean, like, you're pressing the buttons, right? And even if you're getting them perfectly, you have a very hard time telling if you're actually hitting them or not. So that was good. But the thing that's just, like, total crap to me is that, like, and really, it's not, you know, it's not their fault. It's really, it's the PSP interface. I mean, come on, like, the mapping is really, really bad. I mean, like, I'm using the directional pad. I'm using, like, left for one button, up for one button, like, triangle for another button.
You can use the L and R buttons, by the way. It is an option instead of up.
But that's even worse.
It is much worse.
It's just, I mean, there's no real, unless you just have, like, two buttons or three buttons, like, there's just no good mapping for this.
I actually thought it worked out really well, at least as well as it could, considering that it's a PSP.
Yeah, I'm just like, this is just, like, my little pet peeve, you know, and this is the reason why, like, I didn't like, you know, like, Amplitude or Frequency on the PlayStation 2, is I really think that, you know, for games like this, you know, in order for at least me to get, like, substantial enjoyment out of it, I mean, you really need a custom controller. So I'm pretty much asking for the impossible. I realize this.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well,
I
we
mean,
saw a guy who made a custom joystick for the PSP just a minute ago in a video on Kotaku, I think.
Yeah, that was really cool. It's probably a million times better than that little nub thing in the corner.
Exactly. Anyway, so the bottom line is, I think the game is great. If anybody has the opportunity to get it, it's like $50 on eBay. If you have a friend or something, you know, maybe someone gets sick of it, maybe a sequel will come out. I don't know. DJ Max Portable for the PSP. If you like rhythm games anyway.
It's very polished, really, though, I have to say.
Yeah. And it's incredibly difficult. as well, which is good because it'll keep me playing for a while.
You know what? It didn't seem as hard as the latest Beatmania games that are coming out. So,
yeah.
On the other hand, like, I think that every time one of those comes out, like, they make it for, like, just only the people who have been playing all the games this entire time, because if you're not one of those people, you cannot play the new
Beatmania. Well, it's like Mega Man. Who's buying, you know, Mega Man 14 now, other than the people who've been playing it for 10 years? And that's why they had to branch off and make new ones. Like Beatmania, when you hit the 13th game, the 14th game in a series, you can only really cater to the hardcore fans of that particular series. Yeah. Otherwise, no one's going to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it quite applied with Mega Man in the same way, but yeah.
You understand my point, though.
Yeah, but the Mega Man games didn't start getting like harder and harder and harder like crazy.
No, but my point is that like Mega Man X 4 or something.
It's ultra niche. Absolutely.
No one's entering that in the 14th iteration. Anyway, we got tons more to talk about during this this program.
The cover art's better.
Okay. You're right.
Than first Mega Man.
Give us a call back, 866-536-1100. I give her the right phone number this time. 866-536-1100 if you're listening live. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
Hey, this is Crazy Alon.
That's pretty darn crazy, man.
That's crazy.
And we've got engineer Andrew in
World
the back.
Around.
I've been gone so long, I've just, like, forgetting everything.
You forgot his name?
Yeah.
No, it's the AAA.
It's the AAA. I knew his name started with A.
Yeah. We'll just call him A-Team?
Yeah.
I don't know. That'd be pretty lame if people started calling us the A-Team.
Yeah, that'd be...
We could be the UA team. Get it? UAT.
And speaking of UAT.
Yeah. Well, we just got to plug them for a minute. You know, if you're looking into getting into the game industry, you want to go to school, go to uat.edu, University of Advancing Technology.
You know, I really miss those sound effects that we used to hear every once in a while.
Yeah. Andrew's not on the ball. He's busy.
All right. You're making me.
It's like the homeland. For
yeah,
us.
He's like, what sound effect am I gonna play so that Ara never asks for sound effects again?
Does he know that you're Armenian?
No, but I don't know what that had to do with being Armenian.
Well, we're all from the Middle East, and that was that was something.
Well, there. Okay.
All right.
Sure. There you
we're
go.
We're gonna get lynched when we leave the station today.
All right. Well,
being foreign.
Moving along.
Yes.
What I wanted to talk about in this segment was that Rubber Band AI.
I've heard of that when you talked about it.
Yeah. Now this is really slangy. Actually, like I'm wondering like where this term came from. You know, I don't think that I have a feeling, although this is just like a complete made up guess, that it like came out of, you know, the press.
Out of press?
Yeah, instead like I don't think it came from development.
It can't be. The press never speaks intelligently.
But well, they're in my implication.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, what's Rubber Band AI? Rubber Band AI is basically like a slang term that, you know, generally means, you know, an opponent in a video game that pretty much adjusts their difficulty based on your performance, you know.
Oh, so like in a racing game or a sports game where if you're playing
right.
One player, right?
So you know, I mean, I think it was first used to refer to, like, in a racing game, right? You know, if you drive better, guess what? Like, all of a sudden, automagically, all of the opponents are driving much better. And
yeah.
If you drive real crappy, then your opponents are driving crappy. And in some games, this is really interesting to try out, you know, if you actually, like, stop racing, if you stop your vehicle, the opponents will stop moving, too.
Yeah, I think I've seen that before. And actually, I noticed the first time I ever noticed reference to this in a game was in NBA Jam. I forget what they called it, but they had a term in the option screen. You could actually turn it off in order to let people... You either had it turned on so that they would keep up with you or turn it off to just see how much you could slam against the computer.
Now, that's really interesting that you bring up Midway or NBA Jam because NBA Jam's a Midway game.
Yeah.
Or at least was during a certain stretch of years. But... yeah, there's, you know, Midway's games like, I think, you know, the later version of that NBA Showtime and NFL Blitz and, like, I think probably pretty much all their racing games, they are notorious for having this rubber band AI.
Yeah. Well, and, it's seen as a way to keep the fun in a game for kids, right, who so that any age level can play it. I think that's probably the reason behind it.
But. Right. Well, the main, I mean, I think to expand on that a little bit, right, not just kids, but I think the reason
why. Pun, expand, anyway.
The reason why that they do it is because, you know, it's, like, let's use the racing game example, right? You know, if you're racing and you're all alone either in front of the pack or behind the pack, you know, it's not interesting. So, you know, the original impetus to do this is that, like, okay, well, what can we do to make the game more exciting? Again, the game is more exciting if you're always having to, you know, fight against some goal, right? If you're out in front, it's there's less for you to work toward, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you're out in front by a wide margin, you know? So, you know, this rubber band AI, you know, in most types of these algorithms anyway, they adjust themselves so that, like, pretty much no matter how well you do, you know, there'll be guys in front of you and guys behind you. Now, that's extreme, right? I mean, of course, you don't want that to be the case because then you'll never finish a race.
Yeah.
Or you'll never get first, you know? But what I wanted to ask you, Alon, and, you know, anyone else out there who has a comment about this is, you know, do you guys think this actually makes the game more exciting, or does it just piss you off? Because there's a lot of negative ramifications of this, actually.
I think it pisses people off when it becomes obvious. Like, for instance, when you stop your car and everybody stops. Or when you do a specific time in a race, you keep it on the same difficulty level, and then you come back to that same race, you beat your time by some wide margin, yet there's, you know, more cars in front of you still.
Right.
That's a sort of obvious example. But in the case of Midway, you got to understand, like, and I'm sure you're aware of this anyway, but for the sake of our listeners as well, Midway is primarily an arcade-style gaming company. Their games, all of their Rush games, arcade-style games, all the basketball games and stuff, they made their debut in the arcades, and they made, you know, all of their fanfare came from people playing the games in the arcade. Same with Mortal Kombat, right?
Right. That's a very good strategy, I think, you know, for implementing an arcade game.
Yeah, it makes sense in the arcade, where you've got to create an exciting experience in the, you know, 3 minutes that someone's playing the game.
Right. And I'm glad that you made that point, because the thing that I think is really interesting about this topic is that, you know, actually, rubber band type AI is very, very, very good for first-time play, right? Because in a first-time play, or first couple times play, right, the player doesn't know how hard the game is going to be, right? So for the game to kind of actually, like, tune itself, depending on the player's performance, to, you know, give the player a challenge no matter where they're at, you know, that makes itself interesting. Where this completely falls apart is in long-term play. Right? Because if you play several sessions over and over, you know, then I think invariably you start to notice things like, okay, you know what, I'm driving better and somehow yet, you know, I'm not making as better progress, or my lap times are going down and, you know, I'm still not beating, you know, like in Ridge Racer, right? I mean, when you're near the end of the game, you know, you could make these fantastic lap times and not win, right? You're, yeah, like 52-second lap, and then you'd, like, shave off 2 seconds off that and still not win, and yet, like, some other time, you know, you'd have, like, a mediocre time, and, like, you'd end up winning.
Yeah, now, this has a lot of, makes a lot of sense with racing games, though, and arcade games and stuff.
Right, but the thing is that, like, eventually, right, I mean, the player will just realize that, like, this is unfair, and I think that once they get that idea in their head, you know, the design has failed in some ways.
All right, well, we have a caller who I guess wants to talk about the AI, too. And this is Angel, your favorite listeners.
Angel.
Yeah, so we're going to bring Angel on the air. Are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Hey, Angel, I thought you were working tonight. What's going on?
No, I had the night off.
Right on. Well, what did you want to talk about?
Well, basically, in a game like Burnout 3, like, that makes a lot of sense to have that rubber band AI, because you need the car to crash into so that you can boost more.
Yeah. Although in that case, I would argue that the AI isn't really in the speed of the cars, and more in how it attacks you.
Right. Well, it gets a lot more complicated with Burnout 3, right? Because, like, a lot of the game is also about crashing into the cars, and you get rewarded for doing things other than getting into first place, although that is the goal of some of the races.
Yeah. But keep going, Angel.
And, like, I have a game like Midnight Club 2, which is one of my favorite racing games. I got to a point at the end of the game where I couldn't beat it because the AI was just, it was trying to win. And I had the most fun possible with the game, but at the same time, I don't know what the ending is.
You're right, dude. I totally hate it when games try to win.
So do you think that was like, I mean, do you think that it had like some kind of auto-adjusting rubber band AI thing, or it just got to the point where the game just got too hard?
Yeah, it just got too hard because it wasn't like if I slowed down that the cars would get slower. Their times at the end would relatively be the same every
time. Maybe you're just no good, son. Practice makes perfect. No, that's tough. The racing games sometimes, it's really, making AI for a racing game is incredibly simple if you want to make it good. It's making it bad that's difficult. But, yeah, I've played games like that. F-Zero is an incredibly hard game for me. I do really badly at it.
Yeah, I think they got some of that rubber banding in there.
Oh, they definitely do.
Also Mario Kart games, which is why I will never play them.
Games made for kids, basically. Anyway, we gotta go to break, obviously. We will be back right after this to talk about more stuff. Thank you for calling in, Angel. Anyone else wants to call in, 866-536-1100.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. We've got a half a show in front of us, and Ara was just talking about rubber band AI.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to continue, but I also want to challenge you and ask to give me a good example of a game with this feature, so to speak, that is not a racing or sports game.
Not racing or sports?
Yeah.
Actually, okay, I can't tell you. No, okay, here we go. Yeah. Actually, did you know in Soul Calibur, you know, if the same, in the original version, at least, I know this is true for a fact, you know, if the same computer opponent beats you a couple times, then during the next match, the difficulty automatically gets adjusted downward.
I've noticed that.
And actually, that's interesting that you brought that up, because we kind of have, like, two categories of this rubber band type of algorithm, right? We have one that we were discussing before, which is, like, you know, the difficulty continuously changes as you're playing.
Yeah.
Right?
And then like we in a racing game.
Right. And then we have this other kind, which is like the difficulty only changes in between sessions.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, because when you play in the story mode or whatever and you play guys over and over and over, like you can't win, you get completely throttled. And then you play again and again and it just gets easier and you think you're getting better when in reality they're just getting easier.
Right.
The case in Street Fighter, by the way.
The real funny thing is that, like, you know, there's some games where I know actually, you know, that they do this because the developers have told me, like, they do this in Ratchet and Clank, you know, in some of the, I guess, like, minigame type sequences. Like, you know, there's one part where you're just, like, trying to outrun some kind of rising water or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like, every time you can't do it, it gets a little easier.
And that makes total sense, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm glad.
Here's the funny thing, though. It's like, when I was playing it, right, that was totally imperceptible to me. You know, so I guess in a way, like if they do it and, you know, the player gets that kind of response or feeling out of it, then that's good, because like what, you know, the game is attempting to do is basically be a simulation of you improving your skill if, you know, for some reason you can't materially improve your skill between sessions.
Yeah.
You know,
and like what I was saying, when it's bad is when you notice it. And you said it was imperceptible. That makes it a good utilization of it. And it's good because there's so many times people talk about, well, I got stuck in that game, I stopped playing it. The worst thing you want as a developer is for someone to stop playing your game, especially when you know there's a lot of good stuff that they're missing out on.
Right.
Right. Plus, you know, it means that the person is less attached to the game because they spend less time with it. They're not going to buy your sequel. So, I mean, it makes business sense too. Right.
You want
them to play the game and enjoy all of it.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, like more allowable, in my opinion, to do when it ends up making the game, when it errs on making the game easier instead of harder. You know, I remember, like, I don't know, a long time ago when I played a game like, I don't know, like Jet Moto or something, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no matter what I did, there'd just be, like, guys flying in front of me. You know, one of the things I think is really, really most important as far as, like, you know, computer behavior in games or, like, enemy behavior is that it's consistent and predictable, and that the player can learn what they're doing and can adapt to it. And
unless, of course, you're playing Texas Hold'em.
when you have in a computer opponent who's, you know, changing difficulty like this, right? It makes it a lot harder for the player to learn anything from it, and that's
also really frustrating.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, invariably, it's a source of frustration.
Yeah, I agree, but I kind of want to move on because I know we don't have much of a show left. We had half a show, and now we're almost down to only a quarter of a show. And I want to bring up something else.
All right, let's go.
We're always welcome to callers, though, to talk about anything. We've given out the phone number a couple times, but also email us, right? Alon@chatterboxgameshow.com or Ara@chatterboxgameshow.com. Just go on the website. There's a link, at least to me.
Don't hold back.
Yeah.
Give us your worst.
Exactly. And we'll talk about it if it's something relevant to the shows. Anyway, so something that happened recently that I wanted to cover is Capcom's move to can the Clover Studios department or studio or whatever you want to call it, right? The people who made Beautiful Joe and who more recently released Okami and then just released God Hand, right? I haven't gotten a chance to play God Hand.
Neither have I.
It got like mixed results. I'm not sure.
I saw screenshots and I'm like, oh, okay, whatever.
I mean, I guess it's just a brawler. And in which case, it's never going to get really high marks because a brawler is a brawler, and there's not much you can do to impress people anymore. I mean, I guess you could, but if you're making the same old game with better graphics or like one little hook, it's not going to impress people enough. Although there was some interesting thing that a friend of yours was just telling me about last night about, and I actually noticed this too, but I guess IGN gave it a 3 when everybody else gave it a 6 to 8. And so people are wondering if there's some sort of shenanigans. I think the IGN people might just be like, I don't know, maybe play games like that a lot.
We've given out too many 9s. Let's give out a 3 so people
he was saying there was
suspicious.
There must be some part of, you know, Capcom that didn't give the people at IGN something they wanted and they went all ballistic.
Actually,
on their
if that actually happens, like either in this case or in any other case, I would be really surprised because in my experience at least, you know, it's usually happening the other way around.
Yeah, giving better scores for, you know, flying them
Or, you know, this is like one of the industry unmentionables, but basically, you know, like the PR arm or marketing arm of, you know, a publisher basically, you know, slapping the media, you know, on their wrist for, you know, doing something that they didn't like. So,
yeah,
like, oh, we don't like your scores. So guess what? You're not getting product from us for a couple months.
Yeah, or advertising or something. We've talked about that before, too. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about is about dropping this department in Capcom, the Clover Studios. I guess the guys are leaving to go make their own studio now anyway, but
Go ahead.
Here's my point. You get a company, a group of guys or ladies or both together. They make product which is generally highly acclaimed, right? People liked Beautiful Joe. I thought the gameplay, whatever. But, I mean, clearly it had something to it that was missing in other games, and it did well enough to, you know, have several sequels in various platforms and stuff. And then Okami comes along. It's a long-developed game. It comes out. Everybody loves it. Everybody loves the game. Even the change from the, you know, the total graphical switch and everything, and the gameplay in general, people think it's a really solid game. It comes out, and I think the people on Joystick even referred to it as a masterpiece, right? Great game, apparently. They released God Hand as well. Very close succession. They've got two games come out. And God Hand has done relatively well. I don't know if they've done well in the marketplace. I don't know if they've actually sold well.
Yeah.
But they dissolve this department. And it's just ridiculous. Like, maybe they release games that didn't make tons of money yet. But clearly they have potential and they're producing good games. You should know better than to get rid of people who produce something that is good. Because there's just a general rule of thumb. Like, I've been involved in all sorts of things in my life. And when you're trying to make a decision on what to do, right? Do we get rid of these people? Do we not get rid of them? Whatever. You can really, you know what wrong and right options are. You know that, okay, should I punch that kid or should I just walk away? Right? Like, there are decisions you can make, and you can forget about all your emotion. You can forget about money on the table, forget about whatever, and just think, what's the right thing to do? And they have chosen the wrong action. And they did it for financial reasons, but the thing is, the right thing to do will almost invariably lead to benefits in every other area. If they kept them on, I'm sure it would do them well financially.
You know what? Like, I was like ready to go into like, you know, this big like, you know, long-winded explanation about like, you know, how it's you know, it's how the industry is very harsh in this way and all this other stuff. But then, you know, I mean, you mentioned, you know, well, they're going to go make their own studio, right? Well, did that happen before or after? Did that decision happen before or after they got, you know, canned?
Supposedly, it was the board of directors getting together at Capcom saying, all right, should we get rid of these people? And they said, yeah, we're going to get rid of them. I mean, maybe there's some sort of subtext we don't know about, right?
Right. Because I think it all hinges on that, in my opinion. I mean, if they decided that they were going to go make their own studio first, then, you know, maybe this is, you know, some kind of, like, I don't know, politically nice way for Capcom to do
that. That would be developer suicide, right? I mean, when you're suited in with one of the giant video game companies and leave, like I said, I don't know what really happened.
Not necessarily, right? I mean, if you know, there's a lot of restrictions that publishers impose on the developers working for them.
I bet more than likely they said, hey, we need, you know, some more money. Look at the games we're producing. And they said no.
Right. Well, certainly, you know, on the other hand, what could have happened, which is, you know, the less dramatic version is that, you know, yeah, I mean, they canned them all, right? And then they decided, okay, well, what are we going to do? Hey, let's go team up and make our own company.
But at the same time, I mean, look at it. I'm seeing ads for Dead Rising all over the place. Now, granted, I don't watch a hell of a lot of television, but I see Dead Rising ads while I'm fast-forwarding through them on TiVo. I don't see ads for Okami. I don't see ads for God Hand, except in magazines. So which game's going to do well? Maybe the game that, you know, 35 million people know about because they saw it on TV.
That's the vicious cycle. Maybe
the really hot games that came out that nobody knows about because it's not on the 360, it's on the PS2.
Actually, you're firing me up. I definitely want to talk about that.
All right, well, we've got one more segment. We'll be back, everybody, and you can call in at 866-536-1100 if you're listening live. I like when we go live on the air in the middle of our discussion.
That means that we're cool, you know? Oh, yeah. Like, we're so cool that we're not even going to announce the show that we're talking on.
We don't have to mention that we are Chatterbox Video Game Radio hosts. My name's Alon, and that's Ara.
That's me.
That's right, and we also plug the UAT.edu. That's University of Advanced Technology. If you want to go over there and learn about getting into the industry, you can do it!
That's a very nice, smarmy voice you got there.
Yes, it is. All right, so we were talking about marketing, and I was saying...
Oh, my God.
Capcom is a bunch of fools. Don't even get me started. Capcom is a bunch of fools for getting rid of Clover.
Okay.
There's probably some reasons that they wanted more money or they wanted some, I don't know. But
who knows the political machinations of the game industry?
They have, you know, I mean, there's this quoted line or something. I'll you talk and I'm going to get you the quote.
All right. Well, I mean, you totally like fired me up about this like marketing stuff, right? Cuz I was just starting to think of like, you know, you were just mentioning right before we went off the air.
I'm going to say, are you going to get in trouble for bitching about marketing?
No, because marketing in general, this is endemic.
Marketing at Take-Two is fabulous and different than any other company.
Indeed.
We love Take-Two.
We love them so much.
Yes.
Okay. So, like, yeah, I mean, you know, there'll be like...
Did I say Take-Two? I totally meant THQ. That's what I meant to say.
Well, we love Take-Two, too, don't we?
No, screw Take-Two.
Oh, okay, screw
THQ.
Them. THQ. All right. Anyway.
It totally didn't make sense when I said Take-Two. All right, go ahead.
I was thinking you had gotten another letter or something. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, there's like, you know, there's this thing with like, you know, marketing entities in general that they're like, okay, you know what? Like, this isn't going to make a lot of money, so we're not going to spend any money on it. And so like, well, yeah, obviously, if you don't spend money marketing the thing, you know, then you're not going to make money on it. Right. So it's one of those like self-fulfilling prophecy kind of things where it's like, I don't know, it's so obvious, yet it's just used over and over again as an excuse, like not to market something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you understand there's metrics involved and you can determine which games with the marketing will be successful.
I wish I knew because like really like I have this like it's I think that there's so much of it is just smoke and mirrors.
Big explosions? Okay, that's one point. Are there naked girls? Okay, that's another point. You know,
right? But that's just completely subjective.
Sports guy in it, like,
right? I mean, like, I don't know. You know, like, you know, maybe I'm talking from a place of like naivety or something. But like, I really wish, like, if somebody knew about, you know, like, what, you know, what like hard information, just like actual real research, you know, do these marketing people go off of? You know, I'd like to know. You know, please, like, write in, call in, tell us.
I mean, they do things and focus groups, and I mean, basically everything is run off of reports. A bunch of people get together and look at spreadsheets all day.
You know what? I'm gonna say something taboo here. You know, and this is, you know, someone in the industry told me this, who will not be named, right? But you know, basically, like the thing about marketing is that, like, you know, a lot of people who are in marketing, basically, like, half of what they do, you know, they can just, like, they just make up reasons for, right? So it's like you can never tell, you know, whether, you know, if something, you know, if something's a success, right, then you can say, oh, well, it was because I did A, B, and C, right? And nobody goes to check to see, like, okay, well, you know, was it really because A, B, and C? No, I mean, like, the situations are too complex to really, like, isolate those variables to really know. And if something doesn't work, right, it's because, oh, well, this other factor that I didn't have control of and this other factor that I didn't have control of, right? So, I mean, that's another thing that's endemic is that, you know, in order to be really successful at marketing, right, I mean, you blame failures on other things external to you and you credit successes to things that you've done yourself.
Yeah, and that's human nature. But beyond that, you don't spend as much time and effort analyzing success as you do analyzing failure in all facets of life.
Right. Well, you know, in marketing, you do it enough so that, you know, people believe that it wasn't you. And
well, if things were successful, you'd just be like, all right, well, it's because of this and this and this. And you disregard what might be reality, that it had nothing to do with those things, and it had to do with, you know, some blog mentioning you somewhere and that you didn't know about, right? Somehow you're more successful because of that. Or, you know, in failures, you look at everything and you blame everything, blow everything out of proportion. All the little information you have, well, it must have been because of this, or it must have been because of this, or because, you know, the stars aligned a certain way.
Right. Well, I mean, the lame thing about marketing, right, is that the whole entity, like, encourages this cycle, right?
Why is that?
Well, because, I mean, the people who are in marketing who are the most successful are the best at, you know, representing themselves as being the cause of successes, and also the best at convincing others that, you know, the failures were not because of what they did.
Oh, you mean because they're BS artists?
Basically.
All right. Cool. Well, Andrew, do we have a caller here? All right, so let's reach somebody. Is this a real caller, or are you messing with us? All right, we've got someone on the line named Caller. You're on the air. You're going to have to make me able to hear him, Andrew, if we want to put him on.
Hello?
All right, we're going to drop that call because I don't like it. I think Andrew's trying to play jokes on us.
That was not a cool shtick.
Yeah, we had a crazy caller before the show ever started that Andrew had me talk to, and he was freaking nuts. Anyway, all right, so let's talk about some other stuff here. Marketing, I agree with you, is nuts. And I don't know, that's pretty much universally accepted. But at the same time, I have a good friend in marketing at a very large company.
Well, I'm sure he's a fine
Well, that he also, like, I know about things he does, and they're genuinely good ideas, and they do produce a lot of, you know, good marketing about a game. And so they're not completely dumb. They're not completely messed up. It's not just a bunch of buffoons.
No.
Like, they do a lot of good things.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just telling you. I mean, like, these are, you know, the aspects of this system that kind of brings out the worst in it.
Yeah, there's always an argument, a clash between the two. And actually, there's a great story I remember that I was at a trade show earlier this year, one of the several trade shows, right? And my friend was involved in getting the game that he was working on at this event. And because he brought it to the event, it got a lot of attention and it got a lot of big reviews. Whereas the lead developer, like the guy at the head of the company producing the game,
all right,
developing the game, I should say, actually called him and was like, that's really uncool. It wasn't ready. You're not supposed to show that off.
Whoa.
Don't show it off. And I'm being extremely tame. Like, it was an angry phone call.
Wow.
Don't have that game. And he brought the game, and it did really well. And everybody loved it. And he's all like, yeah, see? See? Look at that. Everybody loved it. I mean, in his head anyway.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that's...
That's before he got the call.
No.
No, that was after? So he was just like, screw you?
No, it wasn't like that. It was just like, we've got the game. It was a mix. It was all happening at the same time, right?
All right.
But it gets word, all right, don't show the game. Then he showed the game, and it did well. And it's all like, well, all right. So marketing's job is to show off a great game. I knew it was a great game, and it worked out really well. It did great things. But sometimes developers, for whatever reason, get it in their head they don't want to do something, and they clash.
Yeah, I have to say that, I mean, I understand that mentality of the developer because, You know, we see things about our games that, you know, because we're so engrossed in it, right? I mean, we see so many flaws that most people don't pay attention to. And, you know, yeah, like, you know, when I was working on, you know, Red Star, right? I mean, it's like, when I show it to my friends and stuff, right? Like, there's so many things about it that I just, like, kind of cringe at. Like, oh, that's horrible. I can't believe I did that. Like, I wish I had a chance to fix it and so on. And they don't notice these things.
Well, of course not. All right, we've only got a couple minutes, but we've got another caller, Matthew, I want to bring on the air. Matthew, you are with us.
Thanks, guys. I wanted to get back to the marketing question or topic you guys were talking about.
Yeah, go for what's it. Going on, Matthew?
I think the problem you guys didn't really cover was, like, take these people all the way back to, like, undergrad and separate them out, the designers and the marketing majors. I think that has to do with the huge problem right there, because they're completely different people.
Oh, you mean because they're naturally idiots to begin with? I went to school with all of them. I was a business major myself.
I mean, I'm in the MassCom college, and I'm friends with a couple of PR, you know, marketing people. They're cool enough, but, you know, there's different, you know, they have a different viewpoint. And I think that has a lot to do with the problems.
Yeah, the viewpoint is that they're imbeciles. Yeah. My friend, by the way, I was discussing in marketing, that guy did not go for business. It was a different major. And so that's why I have faith in him that he's not a buffoon. All the people I went to school with, oh my God, they were bricks. I was at a state school, though. But it was weird. All the people from out of state at that state school were smart. All the people from in-state, oh, I wanted to wring their necks. Well, anyway, we've got to go. Thank you for the two-second call, Matthew. We appreciate it. We never got to talk about how much we hate pre-orders. And by the way, yes. Sam & Max 2 comes out like this week on GameTap only. We don't have any connection with them, but you should probably get it. We got to go, everybody. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
See you guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.